The Break Store. Unique branded gifts for the holidays, birthdays, or just because. Visit us at www.thebreakstore.com. Hit the right black get in touch button.
Welcome to a new podcast show about stuff. It's the show about stuff, the Stephen Davis Show. Here's your host, Stephen Davis.
Hello. Yes, you're tuning into the very, very first episode of the show about stuff. It's a show about, well, stuff. We will interview interesting people about interesting things. It will be a show that talks about family history, the performing arts, art, books, places, music, and yeah, stuff. And here is my very first guest on this show. He is the Dean of the Black Theater, Woody King Jr. And here he is, the great Woody King Jr.
How you doing, Steve?
Good. How you doing?
All right, man. I'm all right.
Oh, how is this pandemic treating you?
It's okay, man. It's like staying at home, getting stir crazy. And that's the only thing, getting stir crazy for being at home. I go out maybe once a week, twice a week. I order food in. And my wife cooks. It's not like I go. And if it's cold out and I haven't driven my car, it's been in the garage.
You mean that?
Rolls Royce.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Let's start from the very beginning. And I know that you've done lots of interviews saying the same thing over again. I was born in Alabama. As a matter of fact, I took time last night to view the interview that you did with Roscoe Brown way back on your 30th anniversary that you were all talking about. And that seemed to be the quintessential interview. He was very knowledgeable in terms of the questions he wanted to ask and get you forward. But so I'm going to try not to top that, but to add a little bit of flavor on to those who have seen that interview that maybe there are some things that they didn't know. And I want to start off by, I had told you the other day that one of my greatest pleasures in life was a dinner that I had with you. And it was a dinner that you had, that we had with Amari Baraka, Cliff Frazier, and Douglas Turner Ward. And you all imparted so much knowledge at that particular dinner, particularly in terms of your interactions with some of the famous people in history. And the first one I want to ask you about is Lorraine Hansberry.
I never had any meetings at all with Lorraine Hansberry. I went to a lot of events and I had read so much about her, starting with having first seen a touring version of A Raisin in the Sun in 1959 in Detroit at the Cass Theater, and meeting the actors and following them from the theater to the hotel, telling them how much I wanted to be in theater and how much I wanted to be involved and just be involved. And Robert Hooks sort of befriended me. Thereafter, for several performances, I would be at the theater waiting, and he would talk about Lorraine Hansberry. And I think Lorraine Hansberry was very young, 28 or maybe 27 or something like that. And he would talk about this incredible woman who had written this play. And I had already met Langston Hughes, of which A Raisin in the Sun was taken from one of his poems. What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun? Or does it fester like a sore and then run? Mm-hmm. That's from one of Langston's poems. And I had read a lot of Langston Hughes, and I had met him when he came to Detroit and they gave him the key to the city, but he never mentioned Lorraine. And so by meeting the cast of A Raisin in the Sun was really my first encounter with them. The meeting that we had, I think it was in a Harlem restaurant called Sylvia's.
Yes.
And I remember whatever we had seen was at a place called the Dwyer Cultural Center. And that was owned by Cliff Frazier. And we had done something, or the Schomburg. We had done something at the Schomburg or the Dwyer.
No, because, it was over 124th Street.
That was the Dwyer Cultural Center. And so we all said, where can we go? Because they was culturally involved in the community. You could not catch anybody in Harlem in those days saying, let's go downtown and eat. No, we're in the community. Let's eat here. Let's eat at Sylvia's. Let's eat blah, blah, blah here. And that's where we went. And over food. And I remember you were there with us. And it was like a wonderful evening. That's all what I really remember about it. And I remember that Cliff Frazier was getting ready to take over this Dwyer Cultural Center alone. He had been working with Bozeman Rivers, Harlem Arts Alliance, and he was going to take it over alone. And that's what I remember by it. Amiri, and it's pronounced Amiri. Amiri. Okay. Amiri. Amiri. Amiri Baraka. I don't know why he was there. It wasn't one of his plays that had been done there.
But he was at the theater that night.
Oh,
yes, he was there along with Douglas. And if I remember correctly, you introduced them to the crowd. But it was a vehicle that Ozzie Davis was starring in for you.
Oh, okay. People came out to see Ozzie and Ruby. And, yeah. And I was probably producing.
Yeah. It was actually after Ozzie died, because Ozzie wasn't there. He was. It's tough getting old, isn't it?
Yeah. I only did one thing. But Ruby only did a couple of poetry readings after Ozzie had died. You know that, right? She didn't do a lot.
Yes, I do. But I just remember that it was such a great evening. But which leads me back to something that you were saying earlier. How was it meeting Langston Hughes? These are people that we talk about in history. And the history is that you are the bridge in between some of those great people that you've met. And we now read in the books. How was he as a person?
Okay, Langston was brought to Detroit and given the key to the city. And of course, being, I think, 18 years old, and Ron Milner and I was a member of something called Boone House, a poetry center, and a poet named Margaret Danner, who knew Langston from having, she was an older poet who knew him. She called us and told us, and we flocked to Boone House. And then thereafter, we went to his hotel room at the Park Shelton Hotel. Park Shelton. Oh, man. I'm telling you, Steve, it was amazing, man. We were meeting people. And you guys said, back in those days, the library and the Art Institute of Detroit was probably more filled with Black culture than any in the country. And we had been inculcated with the culture. And immediately next door to the Detroit Public Library was something called the Azalea Hackley Collection of Black Works in Black Literature and Black Culture. And for the last 3 or 4 years, when I was maybe 18, the librarian would call me and say, we got a new book in by Langston. We got this in. And so we couldn't afford it. We'd go there and read it. And so when Margaret Danner invited us to the Boone House and Langston told us where he was living, thereafter, we went to the Park Shelton Hotel to his room.
Oh,
and he said he was very unassuming, very casual, very cool about everything. And he said, oh, man, he looked at the key. He said, I wish they'd give me the money for all this. It was laughter because then, wait a minute, this guy's real. And he's as real as his simple characters. He's as real as his poetry. It was some reason we related to his work. Mm-hmm. But he did not mention Lorraine Hansberry at all. And I told him how much I loved his work. And if I ever got to New York, I wanted to adapt his work. He said, you got anything? I said, yeah, I got short stories. And he said, send them to me. And Ron Milner and I sent him short stories. And there's a big book edited by Langston Hughes called Best Short Stories in America. I got a short story in there. You could not tell me anything. When I walked into New York, I was a published writer, fiction, and I was working on an adaptation of his The Weary Blues, a poem by him called The Weary Blues. And another poem by him called Simple's Blues. I did The Weary Blues at Lincoln Center Library for the Performing Arts. That was precursor of the Negro Ensemble Company. And I used all these young, brilliant actors, and they ended up members of the Negro Ensemble Company. So that
I have a surprise for you, okay? I decided that I wanted to have you with some guests who knew you or could talk about and reminisce over. Here they're coming into this now.
What's happening?
How you doing, sir?
Huh?
Did you get your money?
Oh, yes. I meant to send you a note. Thank you very much. Okay. I got my money, man. Thank you.
Oh, man. These are two of my favorite people. You know, Starletta did some brilliant plays at the New Federal. And she was in our first major hit in New York, What the Wine Sellers Buy.
When I talked with her last night, she told me that very play.
By the time of...
I guess he'll tell you, but Ted Lange is with three guys. It's three of them. And these guys, they would have me laughing. We used to go to a bar in New York. And I forgot that bar. We was me, Ted Lange, and Glenn Turman, and Art Evans. And they would call themselves this, that, and the other. It was on Amsterdam Avenue.
Yeah, man.
Don't you remember, Ted, that you, I don't know if it was you or it was no room for Denzel with our table.
Yes, yes. And Fishburne came in that night. Yeah, Fishburne came in and I was giving him marriage advice. Because he and I were both going through the same thing. Yeah, I remember that. He's now Lawrence. He's not Larry anymore. Yeah, Lawrence Fishburne. That's right.
Maybe if he was in England, he'd be Sir Larry.
Yeah, Larry in my book. You have to go to England. You saw him on what?
I saw him on something. I don't know what it was.
Blackish?
No, John Wick on and said, go out and use it.
How's everything out in California?
Oh, man, I love it. It's great. And with technology, with this Zoom thing now, you don't have to leave. I just directed Satchmo at the Waldorf. That play, Woody?
Yes.
I just directed Satchmo at the Waldorf with L. Peter Callender. You remember L. Peter Callender?
Yeah, man. Woo.
He is brilliant in this part. And we did it. We shot it for a theater in Florida. He was in Florida. I was here in LA. And we used two cameras. And I would go on Zoom and I would look through the lens of the camera and I would make the shots looking through the camera lens.
Wow.
It was amazing. It's going to premiere February 19th.
Has moved us forward, hasn't it?
Yeah, there's a whole thing. If you can imagine now, because we can't be in a theater anymore for a while, but you can do stuff, stream stuff now.
But Ted, you had done so many episodes of regular television.
I shot 60 episodes for Byron Allen.
Yeah. This was something else. You had done a lot of episodes for.
I did. Also, I did when I was doing, when the chickens come home to roost, I was doing the thing up there, which you helped me with. Are we there yet? With Ali Leroy.
I'm doing wonderful. There's been so many positive things that have happened as a result with the new technology. Belma, Michael Johnson, we just finished a documentary called I Love Who You Are about amazing Black women and men, and a tribute to Zeta Phi Beta sorority. And it's amazing because right here in your home, I'm getting ready to do another piece called My dealing with this racist man that my grandson saved from death, literally pulled him out of a car, blazing car. And now he's calling everybody niggas in the hospital. So when I read this stuff, when I was reading the first part, oh, Gamma, it's so nice. Trying to decide if she's Caribbean or not. By the time I got to that, and it's my daughter who's the doctor that's trying to help him, and he's calling her all sorts of niggas and get away. But they give me a tag on the end tell this boy in love. Those days are over, sugar, okay? This is a new day. My grandson had done mouth-to-mouth recitation on him, and he's, honey, you would be dead in your grave on your way to hell if he had not saved you. So it's wonderful because we can still artistically do wonderful things. And with the new technology, all of this is possible. We do have to, you know, I have to be at a hospital and I have to, wherever the location is for my house. But it's lovely.
Tell the audience some of the stuff that you've done in the past, because you've been around for such a long time. Well, all of y'all been around for such a long time.
You're making me feel like a young man, leaving me out of that.
One of the pieces I did was a play of Ted's
Yeah, I wrote that for you. I wrote that part.
Yeah, together.
Yes, Stephen. She was brilliant. She had a scene at the end of that play. Starletta was brilliant when she finds out about the death of her son at Harper's Ferry. Starletta, baby, you, my heart, I'm telling you, captured my heart every performance.
Interaction with Woody.
Right.
So much your interaction, some funny stuff.
Oh, wow. One of the most beautiful things, and Woody just alluded to it, in terms of us doing awesome plays at Henry Street and New Federal with Dick Anthony Williams, one, and all sorts of other wonderful pieces of work, ensemble pieces, and then going to do What the Wine Cellars Buy there, and then taking it uptown to Broadway at Lincoln Center, uptown Broadway, and going on the road with it. And we were on the road almost a year. And that was so amazing because all of us were just freshly getting started and honing our craft, because I wasn't a theater major undergrad. So I'm grateful to Woody, him and Dick and Hal DeWitt and other wonderful people and great directors all through my career that have helped me just to find out what was initially a gift and to hone that gift and to be able to do all these wonderful plays and then starting to do TV and film. And it came as a result when we did Ed Bullins's house party at the American Place, the people from The Gambler and Death Wish. And I tell young students, young people, do theater. People come to see you. You may get an agent. You may get opportunities to audition for pieces in terms of TV and film, because they've seen your work. And that was the best thing that could have happened to me. I have a story also that Cicely Tyson had with that guy, Paul Mann, back in the day. I used to take a train over from Philadelphia to New York to study, and the experience wasn't great. So it ran me to New Lafayette Theater. It ran me to Henry Street, where I could be around my family to help me, to teach me, to grow. I didn't know upstage from downstage, left, and everybody just, if they had to navigate, which sometimes we as actors now, when we see a blank stare in an actor's eye and they don't know what to say on stage or what to do, that's why you need to know your lines and everybody else's to help.
What was that thing that you did after 9/11 with all of the readings? What was that called?
Taking Back Our City.
Taking Back Our City. Okay, Stephen. Woody King did this thing. It was like to heal the city after 9/11, okay? And he had all of these players. How many playwrights did you have, Woody?
Oh, man, about 10.
10 playwrights. I was one of them. Yeah. So Woody said, we're going to read this play of yours. And it was called One Righteous White Boy.
Excellent play. Go ahead.
Yeah, and fun because we're talking about Denzel and Morgan throughout the whole play. And then they show up at the end of the play just as the lights go out. It was called One Righteous White Boy because that's all you need if you're a Black actor in show business. Mm-hmm. All you need is one righteous white boy. You don't want one hip white boy, because a hip white boy will call you a nigga faster than a brother will. But you need, if you can find one righteous white boy, you can have a career in show business. And we did the reading at Woody's Theater, and we had a lively discussion. You remember that? We had a lively at the end of the play. It was fun.
Yeah.
Woody?
Yes.
Talk about your experience with those two. I did some things that earlier, but there must be a funny story or something that happened during that particular time that you remember.
No, I just remember Starletta was a brilliant, fine, and shapely woman. And all the guys really wanted to hit on her, but she was so fine. They said, and so serious about her work, we better leave her alone. We go on tour, and all Taria and Debbie Morgan and all of them gets pregnant. Not Starletta. And the fun with Ted Lange, and who was just on my 50th anniversary celebration.
Yeah.
And
I told him about that. Yeah.
And Art Evans, is if I came to LA and we went down to Leimert Park, we had a ball. We just, and they came to New York, any one of them came to New York, we'll hook up. Yeah. And I eventually hired Art Evans' wife to be our producer of Checkmates in LA.
Right.
And so it's a small world. But funny, we were all business. We were all about the art. We talked about the art. We talked about, and I think Ted Lange was, you were in a hit show, man. You were in a hit show. Yeah. And so it was like, everybody was just there and people come in, get your autograph. But
yeah.
It was that time. It was like we were in the company of royalty. And Art Evans, I think right after he did a Soldier's Play, and I think he got nominated. Didn't he get nominated?
I'm not sure if he got nominated, but I know that Art, he's got his own special curveball that he throws on a part. And he certainly did in a Soldier's Play.
Oh, man, you're bringing these up, man. And being an old guy like me, I remember and shit I don't remember. But those things are indelibly etched in my mind. Starlette, I know you don't remember Debbie Morgan.
Yeah.
Terry Taylor.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know they were on the Wine Cellars with us on tour.
Yeah. And Anderson's girlfriend, Martina King. Yeah.
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 You did that play at New Federal. If you go to the New Federal Theater's website, you will see all of it. They say, oh, there's Starlette. She did a play in 1992. She did a play. Yeah.
But they all came through they all came through you, Woody.
That's right.
Everybody came through you, starting with Denzel.
Oh, Samuel L. Jackson.
Kirk Kirksey.
Yeah, but
I worked with Kirk Kirksey in San Francisco. We did Big Time Buck White.
Yeah, you were Rubber Band.
No.
Charlie, was Rubber Band.
I was a character named Weasel. And for the next 10 years, Charles Weldon always called me Weasel. I said, Charles, my name is Ted. Oh, yeah, I keep getting you confused with the guy that you play. But Kirk Kirksey was an extraordinary actor, character. He was a character. And one time, I met Ben Vereen through Kirk Kirksey. And I was in Los Angeles. I called up Kirk and I said, I'm down here from San Francisco and I'm trying to find out how to get things going. And Kirk says, Ted, I'm going to see Hair. You want to come with me? You'll meet some other actors. I said, yeah, sure. So I go with Kirk to see Hair, sitting in the theater. He said, let's go backstage. Ben Vereen was the star of the show. Ben Vereen he was so good, he was playing the white part, Burger. So we go backstage to meet Ben Vereen, and Kirk puts his arm through my arm like I'm his date. So he says, Ben, I'd like you to meet Ted. I never said anything to Ben about being straight. He never said anything to me about, are you straight? That's how I met Ben Vereen and Kirk. So he was a character. He was really, truly a character.
Yeah, yeah. All those guys, man. All those guys. They were just wonderful. And so someone asked me about LGBT at our theater. I said, you don't want me to go through your people's secrets.
We just loved each other as artists.
Yeah. It wasn't.
The day is like, what?
Yeah.
That's what I was going to ask you. What is the difference between that time?
Family. We were a family. We were a huge family. Sheila and I are going to talk to you at some point. We fed each other. We didn't even realize we were struggling. You know what I mean? Whatever that word's supposed to mean. It's just, if I had it, I'm going to share with you.
Yeah. That was a different mentality though, Starlette.
Yes.
That was a different mentality. I think some of the stand-ups have it now, like Eddie Murphy and Arsenio and Kevin Hart. Those guys will look out for each other now. Some of them won't, but some of them will. But for us as actors, I remember going to auditions, man, and these guys were rough. And so that's how I made the alliance with Glenn Turman and Art Evans, is we decided to look out for each other. And I remember being hired to direct the Wayans Brothers television show, and Glenn had already directed one. And so I said, Glenn, I got to talk to you, man. I'm getting ready to go over here. So we went out to Jerry's Deli in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah.
And we met, and he said, look, here's what you got to watch out for. This guy's a cool guy. This guy's not a cool guy. You know what I mean? He gave me the lay of the land so that when I walked through the door, I knew what the heck was going on.
I guess we won't find out who was cool guy and who wasn't the cool guy, huh?
I'll tell you who the cool one was, but I won't tell you who the other guy.
Also, we would tell each other about auditions. I can't get your role. What has my name on it I'm going to do? So we would tell each other, well, do you know so-and-so is happening? One of us get it, we're happy. Or is it a different animal?
I went up for Book of Numbers, and I knew I didn't get it, and I called up Philip Michael Thomas. And I said, hey, man, I think this part suits you. I know I'm not going to get it. It just doesn't. And Philip went in there, got the role. Raymond St. Jacques was producing and directing. And that's what we did for each other back in those days. Yeah.
What's on the horizon for you all?
I'm going to New York to see Woody as soon as this Corona thing settles down so he can buy me dinner.
Our spot or somewhere.
Go to Henry's or West Bank Cafe. What's your favorite, Woody?
Yeah. Is West Bank still open?
Yeah, and they're doing takeout. Which your spot, Woody?
I haven't been out of the house since the pandemic.
When we can go.
Oh, Florida Mill.
Okay.
All right.
Ted, you heard that.
Yeah, man.
We are promoting restaurants, are we?
You like to do.
Say that again.
That we're promoting what Woody likes. But so, yeah, there are things that I shot in 2019 that's coming out now. As a result of COVID, Magic Max is out, but some two or three other projects will be coming out.
Or is it in the movie theaters or TV?
It's in the movie theaters, but it's also on YouTube. Magic Max, you can pay. I just saw that online. You can pay or rent to see it. And then Charming the Hearts of Men, where this lady got a congressman to put women in the Civil Rights Bill in 1963. And when they were putting that bill together with President Johnson and Dr. King, they weren't including women initially. We've come a long way. Yeah. So some things, projects like that, I'm just looking forward to what is next. Mm-hmm. Definitely looking forward to coming back to New York and spending time with the family there.
There is a change in the paradigm shift of a lot of businesses. The new normal has not settled in yet, but it's coming, something. So how do you think theater is going to change when it gets back open?
That's a good one.
That's a Woody King question.
Yes, it is.
It's going to go back to where it was. It's going to go back to where it was. That's what they're dying for now. That's what they are. When you say change, will the plays be different? Will the artistic input be different? Will the actors be different? No, they're going to get seasoned actors. It's always seasoned actors. It's always seasoned directors. It's not going to change. They're going to try and fill the theater. Broadway is trying to fill the theater. And off Broadway, we are going to be very particular about producing plays with 5-6 characters. It's not going to change. You still got to pay for what you get. And you got to pay the directors. You got to pay the actors. You got to pay pension and welfare. You got to pay, and you cannot avoid that. You got to make it a part of what it's all about. So it's not going to change. Now, will a lot of writers try and write a shit that happened during the pandemic that's funny? But I'm in the pandemic. You can't write some funny pandemic stuff from England, where they're from a city or wherever, but the pandemic is all over the world. And you got to go deep. You got to go deep now. You can't do surface stuff. Like when we did our plays, we went deep. Ed Bullins went deep.
Ed
Lange went deep. Oof. These writers don't go surface, and they don't talk surface. You got to be very careful about a Hollywood sell and a deep conversation. I don't think and Ted can correct me if I'm wrong, when we used to sit in those restaurants, we may not even mention Hollywood. You got to talk about deep. You got to get deep. And you got to talk about the work of Jimmy Baldwin, The Fire Next Time. You got to talk about Ralph Ellison. You got to talk about Toni Morrison. You got to talk about Adrian Kennedy. You got to talk about deep work. And if you can't talk about that, these are not the people you should be with.
That's true.
And part of the reason for the question in that manner is that you just take, for example, going to restaurants that you couldn't go to anymore, and you're used to now a Seamless or Grubhub. You're used to now having your food delivered. Some will go back to the restaurants, but the question is how much of the that those online delivery services are going to keep as part of their.
I haven't found any of those Grubhubs or all those delivery services being as good as sitting down in the restaurant with a friend ordering three or four different menus what you want.
Exactly. Yeah.
I agree with you. There are going to be some people that did go out to restaurants and not going to go back out anymore for whatever varying reasons that they might do so. So I was just asking the question in terms of how, in terms of Broadway, in terms of getting, are the audiences going to come right back or is it going to take a time to do
so? Well, I think that goes to this question of deep. You're talking about artists and artists are social. So we like the congregation of talent in a room. And we like the exchange of ideas. So maybe straight guys and girls are not going to be so hip to go back. But artists need that interchange, man. We need that bouncing off of each other and exploring an idea and peeling away to get to the heart of the matter. And that's what Woody and Glenn and I would do when we'd sit up in a restaurant, figuring out where we wanted to go on the next thing. That's exactly what we did. So that's like, I'm telling you, whenever I came through New York, one of my first calls was Woody King Jr. And I said, hey, man, what's happening? He said, Ted, why don't you go? So I'll be there. Everybody else will be go over there.
Because one thing with living here in California, there is theater here. But we know when we go back home or we go back to New York, that there's a plethora of plays to see. And I remember the last time I was there was when the Adelkos, November of 2019, I got a chance to see, not only to be there at the Adelkos, Woody got awesome award and Barbara Montgomery and wonderful people, but I got a chance to see Broadway plays that were there, at least three or four plays. So when we go in, it's okay. We need the whole fill. And so we are able to have that. And of course, calling Woody, we always know what's going on and where we can meet up because we're observers as well. So anywhere we are, that's just naturally for us to be observers because at some point or the other, what we've seen, we can incorporate in our work at some point.
All right. One last question I want to ask you all is just a personal one in terms of what I want to know. What does it feel like for each of you to have a hit on your hand, have something that public have accepted? How does it feel to you personally? Everybody thinks about the monies, but I'm talking about your personal feelings in getting to that conclusion.
I'll tell you, it's a sort of a vindication when people tell you to choose another business.
Get a real job.
You happen to get a hit, then your road has been vindicated. And I remember when I was in Oakland, California, they said, you'll never make it. There's 1,000 actors out there going for one part. Now, what they neglected to tell me was that 500 out of that 1,000 couldn't act. 150 that were just starting out and didn't have their chops together. So you got that. Then you got another section that didn't fit the part. Then you got, and what happens is, I remember finding myself sitting on the bench outside of an audition with the same actors. It'd be Clebert Ford, it'd be Joe Fields, it would be the same guys, and we're all going up for the same part. And so what happens is, you're not up against 500 actors, you're up against 10. Because there's a lot of factors that go into it. And when you actually then get a hit, you have vindicated your journey that you've achieved some kind of success. And I don't mean just monetarily. I'm just talking as an artist, as someone that has found their craft and that wants to make a career in show business. That's the real beauty of this, is that you can actually have a career. And then you start to see the same faces. You start to sit in the restaurants with the same people that have been on the journey, and they become family and friends.
Yeah.
Starletta, like I would see Starletta all the time and I want to write a part for her. And then the day came when I had a project that fit her perfectly and I tailored it for her. And she became the den mother of the production. You remember that, Starletta?
I will feed folk in a minute. I'm the caregiver. But let me say this in terms of vindication. Wine Cellars spoiled me just straight out because you do it in a workshop. You go uptown and do it. You go on the road. Okay. So that's what made me know that this was what I was given to do, finding your purpose and your reason for existing too. Then I was blessed to do The Mighty Gents, Richard Wesley's play, and a play that had great reviews at the Kennedy Center. We come back to Broadway. I think we were open 10 days. But Ed Bullins told me, you're going to get nominated for a Tony. I said, no, it's my first time, second time out, whatever. And it was true. Morgan Freeman and I, validation again. So no matter what would happen going forward, when people would ask me to get, when am I going to get a real job? I just say I have one. And if we manage to do our W-2s, it all works out. And I'm so blessed to know that I dared to dream this dream as we all have, and that with the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune along the way and different choices we would make, people telling me if you go home to take care of your father 2 years, you could forget about it, a career. And God said no. And it's always for us about the work. The money will come. We always have enough to take care and do what we need to, and also to be a blessing to someone else. Yeah, it's glorious. No regrets. I didn't get into it for fame and fortune. I got into it that I would leave a body of work that you all would respect.
When I was in New York and I was running the streets and I had a little good fortune and I'd take a girl out on a date and she knew I was an actress. She knew I was an actor. She was an actress or something. And she said, let's go Dutch. And I say, no. I'm paying for this because I got some money. But one day I may need you to buy me dinner, fix me lunch. Yeah. So I had all these different actors. I had a list of actresses that I could go to. I said, remember when we didn't go Dutch? And they go, yeah. I said, I need a man. So they would say, okay, come on over to my apartment or something. So that's what I did. I collected all of these little payback things here. Save that one for later.
Yeah. So Woody, you have an even wider catch in terms of the amount of people that you have helped in terms of their careers, the successes in terms that you've had in terms of different plays. Because when I told you before that I was watching last night the tape of with you and Roscoe Brown. And part of what you said was from 1970 to 1980, you had a hit every year.
Yes.
So particularly on that first one, when you had that first hit, how did you feel?
Because you win a lot of awards and accolades and a lot of press and a lot of interviews, and they do not treat you badly. They treat you. You go into for the interview. They have, if it's a restaurant, they'll have coffee, tea, and whatever you want to eat. If you do it in their office, there's respect for you. Yes. There's a different kind of respect if you win the Drama Critics Circle Award. There's a respect for you if you win an Obie. It's a respect that, and what you say, damn, he knows what he's talking about. It doesn't matter that you got 2 degrees and 5 or 6 honorary doctorate. It doesn't matter that you graduated drama school, but they don't know that. They have a respect for what you are saying and what you've done because of the awards and because of the theater being packed every night and people standing up cheering. And you can stand at the, and there's something when you can stand up at the back of New Federal Theater at Henry Street and say, oh man, black girl.
Yes, daddy.
I made this happen.
Yes.
That's, it doesn't have anything to do with money, okay? I didn't get in it for money. I got into it because it was where I was led, and I love black people. And you can say whatever you want to. I got in this argument last night about with this brother about all he's at the university, and he sends all these people into New York. I said, but Don, have you sent anybody to me? No, but she did Miss Saigon. I don't give a fuck about Miss Saigon. I'm talking about you sent some black people to me. He didn't, because that is what it has evolved into. Mm-hmm. I didn't get into this to send 2 or 3 dozen white people to Broadway. I got into it because I want to see Starletta make it. I want to see Alfie Woodard make it. I want to see Entezaki make it. I want to see R. Scott make it. I want to see Gilbert Moses make it. I want to see Starletta DuPaul make it. Now, if somebody else comes along, I want to see Morgan, Denzel, and Chadwick Boseman. You know, somebody else will come along after I've done it and say, oh, man, I've discovered, look at Morgan's palatial mansion. I don't give a fuck about his palatial mansion. That's not going to, who is he bringing along into it? If you go by, if you used to go to Morgan's office, you might see no black people. That's not why we sweated to get him all those roles and all those sweats and when he was playing. Yeah. I'm talking what I'm doing. Joe Papp would say, Woody, I like Mondongo. I want to do it. I will do it, but you guys got to bring on my apprentice, Michael Bennett. Okay, the director and choreographer said, nah, we're going to pass on that because we think we got a show, and he'll do it. And the Hispanic writer said, no, we're going to change the title. And so Joe Papp would say, I'm going to pass on it too. But that doesn't stop me from working with the two artists who put it together, because I love black people. And I know they were ego-driven. They had to have the satisfaction of the creation to get Joseph Papp to come down and see it. But that's not why he came down to see it. He came down to see it because I went to his office and asked him. And I had gotten his respect. Not because they had gone to his office and get him. And if he says, I want to bring in Michael Bennett, he's not going to say, I want to bring in Joe Smo. He brought in one of the best choreographers ever lived just to help. Those are things that we have to really be aware of. Starletta, you mentioned a couple of times. We moved to Lincoln Center because Joseph Papp was running Lincoln Center.
Yep.
We went to the American Place because when Hanman was running, these are people who were close to me and Lloyd Richards.
Yes.
Okay. And we had gotten their respect because of our work and our scholarship and our and shit like that. And I was going, he can't come and say, I'm going to let Starletta go. So this is the package. I'm not interested in his opinion because the package is going to work. Otherwise, I wouldn't come to you.
Wow.
Or Mos Sep T in Philly.
Oh.
I'm not going to come to you with, like, you wouldn't, well.
Let it out.
No. It's like having a thorough knowledge of who you are. It's about identity. You either know who you are or you don't know who you are. And if you don't know who you are, Hollywood will fuck you up. They will mess your head up.
And testify to that, brother. Yeah. Let me just say the Inner City Cultural Center saved my life after the show went down.
Yes.
And I was doing plays all along the time I was on television down at Inner City. But then when the thing ended on television, they slapped me around. But I was down in the Inner City still being able to do my art because of Woody King and C. Bernard Jackson. Yeah, so we grew up under a different thing so that now some other guys come along, they don't feel the same responsibility to the culture as we did growing up because we were denied and lacked access. So we made our own access.
Right.
And that was New Federal Theater on the East Coast, Inner City on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And Stephen, I can say this. While I was at UCLA, which people told me was ridiculous for me to go back to school since I was always working professionally, I said, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. Why wouldn't I want to learn and be exposed to whatever? But while I was there, there was a monologue competition at Inner City. And I was able to do the monologue from Mighty Gents, Rita's monologue, and Ted Lange blessed us, the participants, with money, which I ended up paying rent. Marla Gibbs gave us, we could go and take classes or even teach classes at her studio, which I did one time for Ed Cambridge, but also to go to her supper club. So again, on the West Coast, inner city was here. Ted used his gifts and was blessing those of us coming along to make it easier to navigate this place called Hollywood. And I'll be forever grateful.
Yeah, I did a thing called the Ira Aldridge singing competition. And the deal was I would give you $1,000. It was yours to do with whatever you wanted. But also I would bring in TV directors, casting directors, and agents. So that if you didn't get the $1,000, you were seen by someone that could help you maybe get a job somewhere else later on down the line. Anyway, I thank you. I got to go. I got another meeting that I have to be to. I was so happy I could be a part of this and give my props to Woody King Jr. because Woody King Jr. is the man. He is the man. Yes. I'll see you guys later.
Hey, thank you so much.
So you can see, Stephen, this how deep the roots go of this tree that we would say Woody King Jr. and how the branches are now worldwide in terms of us learning who we were. And yes, what we would have from people is to respect us and our work. And those were the things that we were taught so that we could go forward and that we would be able to navigate through our lives and to still be in this business doing what we love. And well, we got the grounding with Woody.
Great. One of the things that I am most impressed by, Woody, is on your resume, you talk about when you went back to your master's. And at that point, you were already the man, but you felt necessary to go back for whatever the reason is. And it fits right within the theme of this podcast. And that is that it is progress despite obstacles. And you have been the man to show that you still can win even though there are obstacles in front of you. And we appreciate so much what you've done for our community, for the world. You've shown that constantly over your life. And I do appreciate so much that you being the first person, you're the first person I thought of to do a podcast with. And believe me, it took a lot to decide to do a podcast because I had to think, do I want to do this every week? But even if I do no more, I feel that I have contributed to society by letting them know where you came from.
And Woody and Joe Papp did letters, reference letters for me to do my MFA at UCLA.
And that's what it's all about, how to help people.
Yes.
To make a living, but we help people.
Of course.
Our people.
Not taking it to the grave. No, seriously.
Yeah, Steve and I talk. We've been talking. We talk a lot. You think we're talking a lot now on the podcast, but we meet and talk a lot. It'd be different things we're working on. I've never asked him to be on our board of directors. I might have. But it is about a wider culture. And I think, Steve, you are right in getting a podcast. If you can get some sponsors, it can be very lucrative. If you can't, it's going to be all work.
About putting in a podcast up, I never thought about how much money you can make. Hey, I'm paying the money out to do this. And it's for me to be able to capture on film and on audio a person of your stature is rewarded. It's a reward enough for me because I'm going to eat at night and I have a place to sleep. So those are the two things that you most need to eat and sleep.
Yeah, yeah. But people. Yeah, and that's good.
Yes, yes.
He just threw a gem out to you. You will see as you do this that there will be people that will be interested in being a blessing to you as you bless somebody else.
I thank you all so much for being on the first episode of the show about stuff. The Stephen Davis Show. And I will, at the end of this podcast, I'll put up some information about the New Federal Theater in terms of being able to reach. And for those people that are listening, contribute. They need, everybody needs money. And I want you to go forward and go to the website. It'll be up at the end of this show so that you can contribute to the New Federal Theater and putting the different aspects of the show together over the weekend so that it comes out during Black History Month sometime next week.
Okay, we'll have the meeting on, the meeting between Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. It'll be on next Saturday, the 20th. The 27th, we'll have Widows on our Facebook. And then our Women's History Month, we have Hospice for the 6th. We have Black Girl the 13th and 20th. So we have things on. Let's go to our website, www.newfederaltheater.com. Yes.
That's it.
That's it. See?
Wow, look at that. That's awesome.
The pandemic is here, but here is it. And there is a donation where you can donate to the New Federal Theater. Again, okay. I thank you all so much for being on the show. And this is where we take our leave. Thank you all so much for being on the show.
Visit the New Federal Theater's website at www.newfederaltheater.com to see upcoming performances and to donate today.
Thank you for tuning in this week. Hope you enjoyed this show about stuff. See you next time.